Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. You know, like most Americans my age, before reading Country Driving, A Chinese Road Trip, I had some really hazy pictures of China floating in my mind. There's this fear of Mao in my mind. I am kind of curious about Deng Xiaoping and what he did. And then, of course, I think probably everyone my age has this iconic picture of the Tiananmen Square Tank Man. And that was early 80s. That was really kind of shocking to all of us when we saw that young Chinese man standing in front of the tank. And now we have Xi Jinping. And he seems very friendly. He seems more Western-oriented. But yet we know from world news that he could embroil the West in a trade war. So I'd have to say that my take on China was, I think it's a very exotic place. You know, I really wouldn't want to live there. And also, I would be a little afraid to even visit there. However, now, after reading Country Driving, I have to admit that my perspective has been altered. And I guess I'm learning that you shouldn't judge a people by their leaders or by what you see on the news. So I still believe reading a well-written book is the perfect remedy for such short-sightedness. And if you have these same thoughts or feelings on China, if you have fears of Mao, or if you're just really curious about what's really going on over there, I'd really recommend that you read Country Driving, A Chinese Road Trip. And so if you haven't bought the book, I'm really encouraging you to go ahead and buy it. You can find it on abebooks.com, and you can probably pick one up for about $4. And they're really good copies. So, again, it's really a book worth reading. What I want to do today is I want to give you several points to motivate you to buy and read this terrific book. And it really is terrific. Now, I think it's really funny. It's humorous. But it's also incredibly informative. And essentially what it does, Peter Hessler does a masterful job of giving us what's happening, let's say, on the human side of this economic powerhouse. Now, we know China is really working very hard to will its might in today's world. And it's really like the second biggest economy in the world now. So, it really is something. It's kind of a country we can't ignore. Now, China's population is also expected to reach nearly 1.4 billion by January 2018. So, really, it's just something we can't ignore. But you can really get a great insight by reading the book. But before I get into discussing the book, let's just talk a little bit about Peter Hessler. He is a great writer. Just by reading the book, you can see that. But he currently is a staff writer for The New Yorker, and I think it's a very well-read magazine in this country. He's also a contributing writer at the National Geographic magazine, but he's probably well-known for his China trilogy, and the three books are Rivertown, Oracle Bones, and then Country Driving is the last of the trilogy. So we're not reading all of the trilogy at this time, but we're reading the Country Driving one because I think it's really gives you the big overview of what's happening in China, and also it's a little more current today than the other books are. But just a few other things about Peter. He was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 1969. Now that made him really seem very friendly to me. I was born in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, about 17 years earlier than that. So we have this PA connection, I guess. But Peter did not grow up in Pennsylvania. He grew up in Columbia, Missouri. And for all you Missourians out there listening in, he graduated from Hickman High School. And so those of you that are out there listening from Columbia, you know where Hickman High School is. But he went on to study English and creative writing at Princeton University. Of course, I could never have afforded Princeton, but I did go to the University of Pittsburgh, which was a great school and really a semi-private school there in Pennsylvania. Hessler graduated in 1992, and he won a Rhodes Scholarship to study English language and literature at the University of Oxford, which is really a very prestigious accomplishment in his life. Also, he joined the Peace Corps in 1996 and then was sent to China for 2 years to teach English at Fuling Teachers College. Now, Fuling is a small city near the Yangtze River, and so he did teach with the Peace Corps there. Then from there, he stayed in China, but he went on and he became a freelance writer, and he did work for the Wall Street Journal. He worked for the Boston Globe. He also did articles for the South China Morning Post and the National Geographic. Hessler then joined the New Yorker as staff writer in the year 2000, and he served as foreign correspondent for the same publication in China until 2007. So he's really, let's say, been around the writing block, and so he is really, I believe, a very talented writer, and the book Country Driving really does show that. Now, one thing I want to say also about Peter, his sensitive writing about the people of China has won him great respect in China and around the globe. So he's very sensitive and has really been able to capture a picture of the Chinese people that really is really quite impressive and really has won him a lot of respect. Now, one thing I want to say about the book in order to get you to read it is, it's more than just like a travel guide, or, you know, the title is Country Driving, A Chinese Road Trip, but it's really more than just a travel journal. If you look at the book, they have a little car and a map, and they have this really cute little Chinese fellow on the front and the Great Wall behind it. But I just want to tell you, it's much more than a travel guide about driving along the Great Wall of China. It really is more like a chronicle of the vast changes that the Chinese people have gone through as a nation during the 20th and now the 21st century. I mean, the Chinese people have really been subjected to a lot of, well, leadership that maybe isn't the best and has not treated the people the best. You know, they were under Mao. They've been under, you know, a few other tough leaders. You know, they had the Cultural Revolution, which was pretty devastating. And they all called that the reform era, kind of to make it sound a little better than it really was. But there really has been a lot of trouble going on in China, and the people have really, really suffered for it. Now, this book, when it first came out, it is already 7 years old. It came out in 2010. There was a really great interview, or I shouldn't say maybe a really great review about the book. And, of course, he did do a lot of other interviews on video. But the New York Times book review, one of their authors, and her name is Alida Becker, she did a great review of the book. And I thought maybe I'd do is just give you a few snapshots from that interview. But again, Peter does drive along the Great Wall of China. And we'll talk a little bit more about it as we go. I just want to read you a quote from her review. And I think even at that time, the book had a different title. According to the New York Times, the title was Country Driving, A Journey Through China from Farm to Factory. And even that title is a little more descriptive of what the book is really about. And here's how she opens her interview, and I'm just going to read to you from this. And this was first printed in February 28th, 2010. So it is 7 years ago. She said, if China's first urban planners had persevered, Peter Hessler's road trip from east of Beijing to the Gobi Desert would have taken place on the top of the Great Wall instead of alongside it. Now, that's actually quite humorous. But she says, never mind that the Great Wall is actually many walls and that it extends for more than 5,000 miles. And that's really true, and I did not know that fact until I read the book. You just imagine, I mean, we've all seen pictures of the Great Wall, and of course they're going to give us the best pictures of where the wall looks really big and they have the towers. But in some places, the wall is like totally disintegrated. And it might be like 2 feet high. And but it really wasn't just one wall. It was a bunch of different walls. And she says, thinking big was both a curse and a blessing of the 20th century China. And that hasn't changed in the 21st. The Great Wall Road may never have materialized, but plenty of others are being carved through the countryside to accommodate what Hessler calls the largest migration in human history. And she goes on to say, with nearly one-tenth of the nation's billion-plus people moving from rural areas to cities and factory zones. And so in many ways, we have to see that, you know, in the early 20th century, you know, America was just really booming forward, and Britain was booming forward, and had these great economies and great material possessions like cars. The China has really been far behind that, and it's really been backward in that sense, and it's all because of the governments. It's all because of, you know, the domination of the communists and the Cultural Revolution, where they went in, they destroyed a lot of cultural things, and they got rid of a lot of old Chinese superstitions. And in some ways, those things are always very devastating. But here's what she says. Despite its late entry into the car culture, China aims within the next decade to have more highway miles than the United States, and almost everybody in the road will be a rookie driver. And so there are these goals, let's say, in China to really bring China more into, let's say, modern times. But in some ways, once you start reading the book and you read what Hessler has to tell us, you begin to see that China is now beginning to really suffer from, the Industrial Revolution that, say, England and America suffered from. When you have this big industrial boom, it does affect families, it does affect cities, it causes crowding and pollution, it can cause, you know, disease and ill health. And that's really what is happening in China, and that's what Hessler discovers as he travels along the Great Wall. And so it is, again, I think, very informative, but Hessler just has a great way of writing, and it's really quite humorous. And the big humorous part of it is Hessler uses driving in China as the main thread of his book. And he discusses then how China's economic growth and their desire to have the cars and how that's impacting rural villages and how it's impacting, let's say, by driving through China, he's found out about all this mass migration to the factory towns and how that's impacting the families of China. So it is in some ways funny, but it also has more of a human interest impact with it. And there are obviously concerns about what's happening, in China. The thing that I've learned about this, or maybe from reading the book, is that China is made up of a lot more than just its leaders. And there are, you know, just everyday people in China that are far from Beijing. They're far from the government. You know, it's like they're out in the mountains. They're out in the rural area. And you know, they don't have a lot of say in the government, but what the government does impact them. And so that's really, I think, the true beauty of this book. But again, it is really quite humorous. Let me explain that to you, how that happens. Now, essentially what Peter has done is he there's three main divisions in the book. And again, every writer, when they organize a book or they're working on a book like this, they have to divide it up or package it for us so that we can get understanding from it. But book one is where he talks most about driving, and he calls it the wall. And of course, he does rent a car, you know, in Beijing, and he attempts to go out and drive along the wall, and he wants to meet people in the villages. He wants to talk to them. And, of course, he has to, do certain things to do that. So book one is called The Wall. We'll come back to this in just a minute. But book two is titled The Village, and this is where he really gets into, let's say, the meat of the book and what it's really about. And I'll explain this in just a minute. And then book three is titled The Factory. So you have three main sections of the book, but driving is still a part of all of it, all three books. And driving, when Peter was doing this work as a, you know, when he was in the Peace Corps, he wasn't allowed to drive in China. And then after he got out of the Peace Corps and was a journalist, he was able to start driving in China. But you still, as a journalist, were not allowed to drive without a censor. And so essentially, you know, I think book one is the most humorous because Peter had to take this driving test and in order to obtain a driver's license. But it was like the written test was like 429 questions. I don't think any driving test in the United States has 429 questions. So what he does is he goes and rents his car in Beijing, doesn't tell him he's leaving Beijing, gets a tent, loads the Jeep with, I think he had a Jeep, he loaded it with Oreo cookies, you know, some granola bars, some juices and things like that, and he just took off. And you don't want to stay at hotels because you have to show a passport at hotels, and it would show he was a journalist, and they would alert the government, which does eventually happen, by the way. And so it's really kind of fascinating because what he does in book one, he organizes the whole book by including the questions from this extensive driving test. And he says that when he's driving, actually the Chinese totally disregard everything they learned on the test anyway. So I just want to read you just from page 29 and 30. And this, I have to admit, I just roared with laughter reading this, and it really is quite amazing. He also, by the way, takes a series of maps, and the maps don't have any relation to what's actually on the road, and there aren't very many roads at all. In fact, most of where he was traveling was all dirt road, full of rocks, and you know, they just were not at that time ready to have a lot of cars on the road. But this is the bottom of page 29, so when you get the book, you'll be able to read it. And he's talking about the Chinese people. And basically, as he was learning to drive, most of them are learning to drive as well. And he talks about this. He says, for the most part, though they're unflappable, and it's hard to imagine another place where people take such joy in driving so badly. On the open road, it feels like everyone has just been unleashed from a hutong. There's a sudden rush of speed and competition, and the greatest thrill comes from passing other motorists. People pass on hills. They pass on turns. They pass in tunnels. If they get past themselves, they immediately try to pass the other vehicle back, as if it were a game. From what I can tell, that's the only question on the written driver's exam with three correct answers. Now, here it is. Question number 77. When overtaking another car, a driver should pass A, on the left, B, on the right, or C, wherever, depending on the situation. So he's saying they do that. They just pass wherever they want to. He says, on the exam, questions are taken directly from government-published study material, and the Public Safety License Bureau provided me with a booklet that contained 429 multiple-choice questions and 256 true-false questions. Often these questions capture the spirit of the road. And here's one of them, true or false. In a taxi, it's fine to carry a small amount of explosive material. He said, but it's less obvious how they prepare people for driving in China. In fact, the trick is to study the wrong answers. They describe common traffic maneuvers with such vividness that you can practically see the faces behind the wheel. So I'm not going to read a lot of that because I want you to read it. And it is that this whole book one is really, really funny. Now, in book two, The Village, Hessler spends his weekends driving to a nearly abandoned village just north of Beijing. And here's this village way, it's away from the Beijing and the noise, and it's really quiet. So what he does, he really wants to make this village his kind of like his retreat from the city. But what he does, and he spent years doing this on weekends, going back and forth. And essentially what he does, he befriends a man named Wei Zhigi in the city. And what he's able to chart for us or chronicle for us is the fortunes of this little village and how this man was able to start a business, make his business grow. And so it showed the positive impact of like the economic growth in China for this time. And here's what Becker says about this. And this is book two, and this is really like the heart of the book. And here she's talking about the friendship that Peter developed with, I guess we want to call him Wei. Says their friendship allows Hessler to follow Wei's progress into the middle class as his guest house catering enterprise helps transform the village into a tourist destination. Hessler tags along when Wei buys a car and watches Wei's wife devote herself to Falun Gong and then Buddhism, and when their 5-year-old son comes down with a serious blood disease. Hessler shares their experience of a medical bureaucracy that dismisses families from farming villages as ignorant peasants, bullying them into making cash payments before life-saving procedures can be scheduled. So that's really the heart of the book. And it is probably one of the most moving parts of the book. Okay, then the third book, or The Factory, is where Hessler actually goes back on the road again, and he goes to the southern part of China, or to the industrial zones. And along this highway, he comes across all these different factories. For example, one factory makes straws, another makes trouser linings, another makes bicycle bells. But here, he finds it a much more difficult problem to connect well with the lovely people of China. And that's because they're in a different environment. They're like involved with the factory. Now, he meets the factory bosses, and what he finds out is, well, they're not the best people in the world. And they're really, very protective of their own, getting their own money and getting their own, getting ahead by themselves. And this is what Becker says about them. He says they had the local development model was low investment, low quality products, low profit margins, and low education too. And so essentially, they take advantage of the illiterate people, and they want to really abuse them. But essentially, what happens is Hessler does meet up with a young woman and her family, and they turn out that they can now overturn the bosses, and they can actually get into the factories and really kind of help themselves along. So again, he is doing more driving, but it's in a different way. So that's really the big three things about the book. And again, it's more than just a travel book, and it really does take us deeply inside the and gives us a deep inside view of China. Now, it looks like we're running out of time, but next week I have a special program for you. Peter Hessler agreed to talk about country driving with me on JBL, and I was able to spend about an hour with him by Skype. And it's a really great interview. It's about 54 minutes. Peter is warm. He's very friendly. You'll enjoy listening to him. His stories about the making of this book are amazing. So don't miss this special podcast. And it'll be airing next week. And so you really want to check into that podcast. I would very much like to read what you have to say about country driving, a Chinese road trip. Please write me any comments that you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. The address is facebook.com/justthebestliterature. And remember, you can also leave me a message at Facebook. So, until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.